This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have this on the line from the East Coast now, but actually out of Africa, Peter Hammond, who has a ministry that covers Africa and Europe, and he's making a quick tour, two-week tour of the United States, and we're very, very glad to have him on. Peter, when did you get into the country?
Yes, good evening, Dr. Stan. Always good to be on your show. I only arrived Wednesday last week.
All right, fine. Well, tell us really what's going on over there, what's happening. Well, where will we start? Will we start with South Africa? Will we start up in the north with in the Sudan, in Darfur?
Well, indeed, Africa's really a continent in conflict where we've got a battle for the soul of the continent. The battle's been raging for a long time with Marxism and Islam fighting for the soul of Africa, but at this time I would say Christianity is winning the battle against Islam. Islam suffered some serious blows just recently. Malawi, which was a country under the Muslims for 10 years, now has a Christian president. Nigeria, which had Muslim dictators for 38 years, now has a Christian president. Sudan, where the government of Sudan was trying to enforce Islam on the south, has effectively admitted defeat in their 50-year war of jihad against the Christians by allowing autonomy in the south and exemption from Sharia law. Basically, they've acknowledged the fact that they can't beat the south right at this moment, and so they're going for the old ploy of having some kind of ceasefire while they work out a better way that they can fight the Christians. But basically, Islam has suffered a few serious blows, and Christianity is advancing in Nigeria, in Malawi, in Sudan, greater than it has at any time before. So we praise God that the churches in Africa are showing some resilience.
No, well, that's really wonderful to hear, and that, you know, of course, the Muslim faith really is based more on hatred than anything, and hatred of the Christians, and certainly the Christians aren't going to be attacking the Muslims unless they themselves are being attacked. And but that was exactly what was happening in Nigeria, and I know certainly in the southern Sudan, and just praise God for what you and the others have been able to do to help strengthen the faith of these people amidst terrible, terrible adversity. Now, what's really happening in Darfur? We hear that perhaps close to 100,000 people have been killed there, and these almost tribal warfare that's going on. But is that an exaggeration, or is that a fairly accurate figure by this time?
Dr. Stan, I think that most of what we're hearing from Darfur is an exaggeration. It is bad, there's no doubt about that, but there's a couple of reasons why some non-governmental organizations and the UN are exaggerating the extent of the atrocity in Darfur. Darfur is bad. What you've got in Darfur is typical Arab banditry, the kind of thuggery and violence which has been pretty much characteristic of these characters in that area for centuries. This is not anything new. Raids, taking slaves, burning, looting, raping, destruction. It's evil, it's wicked. But to be honest, it's been happening in the same amount of atrocities pretty consistently for quite a long time. So why the sudden attention on Darfur at this time?
Hold that thought. We're going to be right back in just a moment with Peter Hammond from Frontline Ministries. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Peter Hammond. And basically, in Darfur, you have Muslim against Muslim. This is not a Muslim against Christian issue. So are these sort of really marauding Arab bands, or are they being sent out with the full support of the central government in Khartoum?
Yes, indeed. Dr. Stan, you've put your finger on it. It is a Muslim-on-Muslim conflict. There's a bit of a racial angle because you've got black Muslims being targeted by Arab Muslims. So you could say perhaps it's got a racial angle, but it doesn't have a religious significance because, yes, there's no Christians in Darfur. Darfur is not persecution of the church because there is no church in Darfur. Darfur is a 100% Muslim area. What you have in Darfur is Arab banditry attacking fellow Muslims, but they're black Muslims. And so the world's attention on Darfur is primarily because Muslims are suffering. But the far greater human rights abuses that have been perpetrated against the Christians in the Nuba Mountains in central Sudan or the Christians in southern Sudan, far greater atrocities, which over the last 30-odd years has easily chalked up about 2 million victims, most of which have been Christians, that has been steadfastly ignored by the same media and the same United Nations that's now screaming blue murder over Darfur. So I must say that when I look at what's going on Darfur, according to our information on the ground, the statistics being thrown around are generally exaggerated, although the type of atrocities are not. That's accurate. But the numbers are being inflated in order to get more funding for the UN and for these different NGOs. So basically, our understanding of the extremely unbalanced reporting on Darfur and the ignoring of the Christians who've suffered in the Nuba Mountains in southern Sudan is because the UN needs some human rights crisis every couple of years in order to justify their worthless existence and to somehow or another motivate a further infusion of a few billions of dollars more funds into their bloated bureaucracy and keep the UN afloat. So I don't believe what you're reading in the press right now is entirely justified by the situation or fueled by real concern for the people. What we're seeing at the moment is just the United Nations trying to get a whole lot more funding in order to continue their pretty pathetic and worthless existence.
Well, now, what about the Congo? We hear something like 3.5 million people slaughtered there. Is that an accurate account? Because this war has been going on probably for 10 years or more.
I'm sorry to say that about 3 million dead in the Congo is not an exaggeration.
Hold that thought here for just a moment as we bring our other stations back on, right on board with us from out across America. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening, Peter Hammond on Frontline Ministry. And, of course, he is on the front line, what's really going on in Africa, and certainly in Eastern Europe as well, where his ministry extends. And Peter was saying that as far as Darfur is concerned, this is the western part of the Sudan, that this is Muslim, this is more racial, Arab Muslim against black Muslim. A lot of it is the traditional Arab, thuggery, as she describes it, simply going out and killing and raping and taking slaves. And yes, in the wonderful Muslim religion today, why slavery is quite accepted. There doesn't seem to be anything wrong with it, and Sudan still, people in Sudan still have slaves. Peter's point was that the greatest tragedy in the Sudan was the war against the Christians, which at least for the time being has simply resulted in a stalemate and a temporary ceasefire there. But about 2 million Christians had been slaughtered there over the last 30 years. But this has gotten relatively little coverage here in the United States. Darfur is getting a tremendous amount of coverage, and he feels that the figures that we've been given are exaggerated. Then, of course, we switched over to a discussion of the Congo. It used to be the Belgian Congo, Zaire, but about 3 million people have died in this war over the last 10 years. Would that be a fairly accurate estimate?
Pretty much so. There are huge mass graves in the rainforest of the Congo. It's quite a tragedy because, you know, the Congo was quite an advanced, a pretty rich country under the Belgians, mineral-rich, very good infrastructure. You could drive from one side of that huge country to the other on excellent roads in 4 days in a normal car. Today, with a four-wheel drive vehicle, you could not drive across the Congo in 4 months. It wouldn't be possible. The Congo is a mess. We've just had a mission into the Congo, and in fact, we're sending another mission team in very soon. There's tremendous amount of spiritual work going on in spite of it, but we are talking about terrible atrocities. Pastors have been buried alive. Pastors' families have been wiped out for no other reason than that the government there has complained that their prayers are interfering with their actions, and literally they've condemned pastors to death for praying. So there's a tremendous amount of oppression, slaughter, fear, atrocities in the Congo. It's of course a Marxist dictatorship, which is propped up by Robert Mugabe's Zimbabwe troops who are in there. Angolan communist troops are in there. You have got communist troops from Namibia there. It's almost the who's who of the communist world are in there propping up this Marxist dictator Kabila. And in addition to that, in the Congo, what you've got is a tremendous amount of hostility to the church, a lot of persecution of the church. We just don't know why the attention being focused on Darfur isn't being focused on the Congo, where Christians are suffering. And I can tell you what I'm hearing from Christians all over Africa at this moment, and that is, it seems that the world is only concerned for Muslims. They don't care when Christians are suffering.
And I think that this is really so true. I mean, here you've got communism now, and here in the United States we're told, oh, communism is dead, there's no more communism, and yet, of course, these are Marxist. Angola is Marxist. Rhodesia, or Zimbabwe as they refer to it today, is Marxist. Southwest Africa is Marxist, certainly. The Marxists are in control in South Africa itself. Are they sending any troops or help to Kabila?
They certainly want to, yes. There's a tremendous amount of movement right now within South Africa where the government's trying to send a peacekeeping force, as they call it, through to the Congo, but there is resistance within South Africa to doing this because there's no clear order. And in other words, peacekeepers need to go into a situation where there's some kind of stability, and there isn't even the basic minimum requirement for that at the moment, that our folks are saying they'd be sent into a situation where our soldiers would be in an intolerable situation and at a tremendous risk for no discernible gain, because there's no government to speak of. You've just got a bunch of corrupt Marxists who are allowing one mineral cartel here, another one there, and taking bribes. There's no law and order to speak of in the Congo, so to send our troops in there we think would be akin to America sending its troops into Somalia in the early 1990s.
Well, I've heard that there are actually some American Special Forces units guarding some of those mines there. Is there any, are there any American mercenaries in there guarding the mines so that they can continue working amidst the chaos?
I have not specifically heard that, but I would not think that's unlikely. There's all kinds of mercenaries in the Congo for very narrow goals, such as guarding one particular mineral depot. So it's possible.
Well, and of course, the thing is that the Congo is so rich. They've got copper, they've got diamonds, they've got all sorts of natural resources. And of course, I think that's one reason why really there's so many people outside the Congo have their eye. Everybody would like to control the mineral wells Congo. Well, let's get then down to Rhodesia or Zimbabwe. I'm surprised that there still is enough money that Robert Mugabe, who incidentally for our listeners, is a lifelong Marxist communist. He was brought to power by the American State Department. The people there elected a man named Bishop Mezaweo, and we didn't want him. We wanted the Marxist Mugabe, and so we got him in there, and total chaos. My understanding, well, you tell us what's going on there. I understand the unemployment is skyrocketing, famine has gripped the land, there's no money, the people, both black and white, are starving. What's really going on in Zimbabwe today?
Dr. Sam, it's impossible to exaggerate how bad it is in Zimbabwe right now. The country's on a complete meltdown. There's a total absence of money, there's a total absence of anything. You've got power cuts most of the time. The shops are just continually empty. People are dying of starvation, literally. And how can they not? Because Mugabe went on this de-kulakization a la Stalin and Lenin, destroying the farmers in the country, because farmers were enemies of the state, as he said. All farmers are enemies of the state. Well, you destroy your agricultural foundation of a country and your people will starve. They confiscated 5,000 farms, 5,000 productive commercial farms, were seized by government-organized mobs. Vast herds of cattle and wildlife have been slaughtered. Crops and stores have been burned. Farmhouses have been looted. Many people beaten or murdered. And one of the most productive agricultural economies in Africa has been systematically destroyed. It's a national suicide. And Robert Mugabe continues to terrorize his own people. The only independent newspapers were blown up, their editors and journalists seized by military police and tortured with electrocution. There were judges, including the Supreme Court justices, who were threatened with their lives for not bringing out judgments in agreement with the government, anarchy, and so they got hounded out of their offices. Sometimes mobs came into the justices' offices, even to the courts, and beat up the judges, until the judges resigned and left offices, and then the government could put some communist stooge in to give the kind of verdicts that they wanted. So on every level, from journalists being killed to the only independent radio station being blown up, what you've got in Zimbabwe is nothing other than state-sponsored terrorism.
But isn't this the government that we brought to power, the United States? Didn't we intentionally bring this to power?
I'm sorry to say that that's absolutely true, Dr. Sand, because Henry Kissinger is the one who pushed this whole peace plan, which forced the pro-Western Rhodesian government, which, let's remind you, was an ally of America in the First and Second World War, fought alongside Americans in Korea. The Rhodesians were a very loyal ally of the West, but when they were attacked by Marxist terrorists, the West decided, for reasons best known to themselves, to support the terrorists, the Marxist revolutionaries like Robert Mugabe, and to force the pro-Western allies in Rhodesia to accede to the Kissinger peace plan, which under Andrew Young and under Jimmy Carter came to fruition, with Robert Mugabe becoming the dictator of Zimbabwe, with massive amounts of U.S. aid and your tax money going to help this Marxist thug consolidate his power over this once very productive and very free country.
And of course, I think it should be noted that there was no racial discrimination in Rhodesia. Didn't they really have, what did they have as far as voting? Did you have to own property? What was the requirement to be able to vote there?
Correct. Rhodesia was a non-racial country. They had a qualified franchise if you met a minimum educational qualification, or if you owned a property, you could get the vote. So the vote was a qualified franchise with no racial requirement at all, pretty much like Britain would have had in the 19th century. And they were trying to build up civilized government, and of course they were doing a very good job. Rhodesia had the lowest crime rate in the world, it had the lowest unemployment rate in the world, and it was decreasing. So the country was really a model for Africa, and I think that's probably the reason why Rhodesia was targeted. It was working too well. The blacks and the whites had such excellent race relations, there was excellent cooperation, it was a multiracial system, and Rhodesia was functioning with a responsible government, with a qualified franchise. And I think there's nothing that the Marxists hate more than a success story. They just have to somehow pull it down.
And I think that would really carry right over to certain forces within our own government, represented by Henry Kissinger. And when the people of Rhodesia held an election and they elected a very moderate black leader, Mr. Mazaweo, we wouldn't accept that. We insisted on another election where thuggery came in and the threats and all sorts of really rather corrupt election that put Mugabe in power, and we've been backing him ever since. Now, what's the United States trying to do to help the people there? Because it's a total breakdown. People are starving there, and there's a total state of lawlessness. What's the United States government doing today?
I wish I could answer that, Dr. Stan. I do not know what they are doing. What I do know is that the United States government at the time promised to guarantee the rule of law and the private ownership of property if Rhodesians accepted the Kissinger peace plan, which they did. So America's got a moral obligation to help, and yet I'm not sure what they're doing.
Well, I would like to suggest to our listeners that the word of Henry Kissinger and the American leaders, and $5 will buy a cup of coffee in most countries of the world, at least it would in the past. Where, unfortunately, America has betrayed its promise, and the people of Africa know that. It's just tragic that the people of America don't know it, that our leaders, really cannot be trusted, specifically people like Henry Kissinger and the people he supports in the current administration. Well, Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, we're talking about Zimbabwe. Have an awful lot of the whites fled from the country. I understand a lot of the white farmers have actually been offered plots of land over in Nigeria. They'll just come over and develop it.
Yes, Dr. Stan, there is not even 10% of the whites in Zimbabwe now that there were 24 years ago at the hand of a 25 years ago at the hand of a. There's less than 29,000 whites left in Zimbabwe right now. There were 300,000 there at independence, you may recall. Now, the incredible thing is that many of these white farmers have moved to Zambia, Mozambique, Malawi, and even as far afield as Nigeria, where the governments there are giving them land and pleading for the Rhodesians to come. In fact, in Nigeria, the government's guaranteeing $1 million interest-free loan to any Rhodesian farmer who will come there and set up farms. They'll give them the land, and they will give them $1 million interest-free loan in order to set up all that they need, because they know that these men are worth their weight in gold, and they're going to help the economy. And the Zambian president himself went and welcomed some of these farmers to Zambia and said, this is now your land, this is your home. Remember, Zambia is now a Christian country. Their president's just been baptized as a Christian too, and they, by constitutional amendment, are a Christian nation. And Zambia now, for the first time ever, has surpluses of crops, and they are exporting millions of tons of food, and it's food being grown by the ex-Rhodesian farmers who are now farming for Zambia. And so Zambia is, in fact, exporting food to Zimbabwe, who's having to pay something like 10 times more than they would have if they'd allowed these white farmers to stay in their own land in the country. But this is some of the ironies of what's going on at the moment.
My understanding, though, is that a lot of the blacks are going with the whites to Nigeria because they want a job. I mean, the blacks are suffering terribly there in Zimbabwe.
Dr. Stan, at the moment, there's something like one out of every three Zimbabweans has fled the country. One out of three. I mean, that's even a higher percentage than the people fled out of East Germany. You remember 3 million East Germans out of about 12 million fled out of East Germany, voted with their feet to escape from the workers' paradise. Well, the percentage is even higher in Zimbabwe. You have got over one out of three Zimbabweans has fled out of the country.
And you're really speaking of black Zimbabweans.
Yes, we're talking about black Zimbabweans who have fled as refugees. They've voted for their feet. So this is the liberation that the United Nations, the World Council of Churches, the Organization of African Unity, and Henry Kissinger's State Department achieved for Zimbabwe, a state of total destabilization. And Dr. Stan, we've got to look at this. Why is it that the world, which used to be pretty stable, is systematically being destabilized? You have how many refugees in your country whose countries were betrayed by State Department and United Nations policies? What is going on? Why is it that people who are happy in their own countries with some kind of stability had to be undermined so that you can have refugees flowing into the West and more money having to be poured in to fix a messed up situation? Why is it that the U.S. State Department has had a policy of replacing stable pro-Western governments with Marxist revolutionaries, terrorists, thugs, and corrupt criminals? What's been going on.
I think that is the major question. Why is the American State Department replacing stable governments with Marxist thuggery and unstable Marxist governments? And that's the question we ask repeatedly here. Of course, we have an answer for that. We believe that there's organized evil working at the highest levels of our government. There's always been a dark force in our society, and fortunately, today, it's in already a total effective control of American foreign policy. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Peter Hammond and his ministry, Frontline Ministries from Africa. Well, let's shift. Well, first of all, how bad is the starvation? What's the employment rate in Rhodesia? How bad is starvation in Rhodesia today?
Well, it becomes hard to get any accurate statistic when things have broken down as badly as they have. But the fact that over 4 million Zimbabweans have fled the country already tells us how bad it is. Officially, a few months ago, I heard that the unemployment rate was 85%. That's 85% unemployed. I mean, can you imagine a country with 85% unemployment? It's just mind-boggling. They have destroyed tourism, they've destroyed agriculture, which were two of the biggest employers of people in the country, and of course the service industries, there's a ripple effect, and it's catastrophic. Many of those remaining 15% who have some kind of job probably have no work because there's no raw materials or no resources. We've had teams going through Zimbabwe. Of course, we're smuggling in food, we're smuggling out animals, we're helping people, we're doing ministry in the country, illegally, of course, because it's a restricted access country. No missionaries are allowed in Zimbabwe, and no journalists are allowed into the country either, by the way. So everything we do there is very much illegally and dangerous. But we have gone to some of the top five-star hotel restaurants just to check in the capital city, and they've got no milk, they've got no meat. I mean, imagine that. You can go to the best hotel in the capital city. Sorry, that's not on the menu. Sorry, that's not available. And well, what actually do you have? All I had at the end was sadza, a sort of a mealy-meal pup-like grip. That was all they had to offer at the top five-star hotel restaurant. That's how bad it is in Zimbabwe.
And, of course, the people are really starving, and haven't they even made it very, very difficult to bring food in to help the people there?
Completely difficult, illegal. You are not allowed to take in food into the country unless it's given to the government, to the ZANU-PF Marxist Party, to distribute to their supporters. We have had missionaries killed. We have had evangelists killed. I just received a report that our key man that's been working in Zimbabwe has died in a car accident in Zimbabwe. Now, I'm highly suspicious when people die in car accidents in Marxist countries when they are key organizers for a mission. As you know, throughout Eastern Europe and communist lands, regularly you get people killed by a big truck hit and run, and they call it a vehicle accident, and that's how they get rid of some of their opponents. Well, our key man over there just died in a vehicle accident with a big truck, I, of course, don't have more details yet. This news only just came through this week. But people are being murdered in Zimbabwe all the time.
And, of course, what's Henry Kissinger doing to fulfill his promise to the people?
Well, that is the question, because the Rhodesian voters, they took the word of Henry Kissinger, who said he guaranteed on the authority of the American government to guarantee the rule of law and especially the providential property and the farms if they would accept the peace plan. The Rhodesians did their part. At this stage, we don't know that the State Department's done any of what they promised. And when we think of President Bush's promise after 9/11 that the U.S. government would no longer distinguish between terrorist supporters and terrorists themselves, I would like to reiterate the challenge I made at that time in the Uprooting Terrorism article I wrote, that the U.S. government must make good that promise and should treat the U.S. State Department, the World Council Churches, and the United Nations as the terrorist supporters they are. If they have put in power some of the worst terrorists in the world, including Robert Mugabe, who your own Secretary of State calls an outpost of tyranny.
Well, let's get down to South Africa. What's happening in South Africa? You know, I lived there for a time, and I loved the country. And my understanding, though, is that the unemployment is very high. The poverty rate among the whites is tremendous. The poverty rate among the blacks is tremendous. You know, AIDS is decimating the country. There's increasing lawlessness, less and less industry there. What is happening in the workers' paradise that was created by our State Department that demanded, of course, that the apartheid government there, that was trying, of course, to rectify the situation and convert into a multiracial society? Instead of that, we seemed intent upon bringing the Marxist Mandela to power. And ladies and gentlemen, contrary to everything you've heard, Nelson Mandela was a Marxist. Why, when he was became the president, why, there was Fidel Castro and the communist leaders, Gaddafi, communist leaders from all over the country were there, right along with Hillary, and as I remember, I think Hillary was there as well. We're going to be back in just a moment with certainly with our guest, Peter Hammond, and we're going to talk about South Africa. It was the jewel of Africa. It was the place where blacks were trying to get in. Nobody was trying to get out. Blacks were trying to get into South Africa. Injust society, yes, but they were really working when I was there to try to correct the injustices. It was going to take time, but of course we were more intent upon destroying South Africa. And I think we've pretty well succeeded. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Peter Hammond. Peter, what's going on in South Africa?
Well, you know, South Africa really has gone through tremendously difficult times. The crime rate there is absolutely colossal. It's horrific. In South Africa at the moment, we have well over 20,000 people murdered every single year. Now, to give that some kind of perspective, bear in mind that in the battles between the ANC terrorists and the South African government, the whole apartheid struggle, 18,500 people died in 48 years of war. So we're talking about soldiers, police, terrorists, rioters, arsonists, innocent victims, on all sides, whether you're talking about the war on the border or the riots in the townships or the assassinations. If you put it all together, on all sides, 18,500 people died in 48 years of war against apartheid in South Africa. We have 20 to 25,000 civilians murdered every single year under freedom in peace in South Africa. So we have had literally in the last 12 years of so-called peace and democracy in South Africa, we've had over a quarter of a million people murdered. And then you must add to that 400,000 babies killed by abortion, because in the old South Africa, abortion was illegal and babies were protected by law. Today, babies are not protected by law, and abortion is legal because Mandela signed that into law and forced it on us. Pornography used to be illegal, now pornography is legal. Homosexuality used to be a crime, now it's publicly promoted in the schools by the government curriculum. We have not only gambling legal, but prostitution is legal, and our government is enthusiastically wanting to put one-armed bandits and casinos in townships in the poorest areas so that they can actually impoverish the poor even more and enrich the rich more with legalized gambling. So vice is on the ascendancy. And what's also very disturbing amidst the rising crime in the country, the government is on a gun grab. At the moment, they're trying to force everybody starting this year to re-register their guns, and they are trying to limit the amount of firearms in people's hands, and they're actually talking about moving to a situation where only the government will have guns and firearms will be taken out of the hands of all civilians. So imagine that you've got a whole lot of black people who've only recently got the right to own firearms, and now the government wants to take that right away from them while they're in the middle of the greatest crime wave ever in the history, with people being murdered, hijacked, raped. Rape is just one of the worst rates in the world at the moment. And how can it not be? Because the police have been restricted. The best policemen have been kicked out just because they're white. You've got affirmative action.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment when we bring other stations on board here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest Peter Hammond from Frontline Ministries, and Peter is describing what's going on in South Africa. I mean, 20 to 25,000 people are killed there in this country every year, and 48 years of apartheid, the wars of apartheid, while a little over 18,000 were killed in 40-some years, 48 years, and yet, of course, 20 to 25,000 are killed a day, every year in South Africa today. The whole structure of society, immorality is rampant. They're doing everything they can to appeal to vice. They want to disarm everybody there, blacks and whites, and of course the blacks have to have weapons to protect themselves. Rape is endemic. Of course, AIDS is endemic too. What is it, 25% of the population are AIDS infected?
The last I heard was 27% of South Africans were AIDS. HIV AIDS infected, and that's official.
All right, fine. And of course, I suppose it's much more in the blacks than the whites, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Very much so.
It's my contention, and I don't think there's any question at all that this disease is a predilection for blacks, and I don't think that's accidental. But anyway, now what about the employment there? What's happening? You were mentioning, of course, that they're throwing the whites off the police force and out of administrative jobs simply because they're white and they have this affirmative action, which is to bring blacks and put them into all sorts of key positions. So what's happening to the living standards of the whites? What's happening to the living standards of the blacks there? Because when I was there, I mean, there was a growing black middle class. I can never forget driving over to the hospital every day in my old junky car and seeing this black man pull up next to me with his big Cadillac and gunning the engine. There was a growing prosperous middle class at the time. What's happening today in South Africa?
There still is quite a strong black middle class, but now you've got the black super-rich elite. You've got a huge new class of black millionaires who are all, of course, government and government beneficiaries who are getting what they call black economic empowerment, or BEE. A business, in order to get a government contract, has to be black economic empowerment, which means over 50% of the shares in the hands of some black. But the interesting thing is the company is not allowed to sell their shares to blacks. They've just got to give it to them. That's part of BEE. So the whites have to buy their shares. The blacks just are given shares in the companies. And you've got an enormous amount of affirmative action, which is undermining investor confidence. It's undermining efficiency. You can see it in the tourism industry where a lot of the people are either not trained or not motivated or have a bad attitude or a chip on their shoulder and can't be fired under the new affirmative action laws. So it's extraordinary when people think, oh, Nelson Mandela, he's the one who ended racism in South Africa. Not so. He actually brought racism back. There was no apartheid laws for Nelson Mandela to scrap. Nelson Mandela didn't have one apartheid law scrapped because he couldn't. They'd all been scrapped before he came to power, long before he came to power. Not even de Klerk had that much apartheid to abolish, because P.W. Botha abolished most of apartheid already in the 80s, as you may recall. And so all Mandela did was bring racism back, because he brought race classification back into law, and from that, Mbeki has launched this aggressive affirmative action, which is nothing other than racism. It's job reservations. It's racial quotas. And I would have thought that that was unacceptable in the present day. It's interesting, in America, you're concerned for minority rights. But in South Africa, there's no concern for minority rights. The minority is just trampled. The white minority is trampled. The colored minority is trampled. The Indian minority is trampled. The black majority gets the extra benefits. I don't know anywhere else in the world where affirmative action is for the benefit of the majority.
Well, of course, we live in a world gone mad. My understanding, though, is that an awful lot of the whites and the colors now have been impoverished, whereas many of them were in the middle class before.
Indeed, the colored people say we weren't white enough in the old regime and we're not black enough in the present regime. So the mixed race or colored people have suffered probably the worst. They've got some of the worst of the crime rates. Many of them are targeted by black criminal class that's rising up. In our city of Cape Town, which, as you may remember, was one of the most beautiful cities in the world, a very crime-free city in the old days, today, the newspapers are claiming that there's 100,000 Cape Townians employed in organized crime alone.
100,000 Cape Townians in organized crime?
They say that organized crime is the biggest employer in our city. And we feel it because we are under siege, literally, by a huge criminal class. The amount of car hijackings, rapes, house breakings, murders, theft, it is organized crime, and it goes up to the highest. We're talking about right into the mayor's office and to the premier's office. The crime, the corruption, is a daily news item affecting every level of government, right up to the vice president, are all a part of investigations and scandals of huge, colossal corruption, sometimes going into the billions.
Well, now, what's happening in industry there? What's happening in unemployment?
Well, the South African people are pretty resilient and have been quite innovative, and there's a lot of free enterprise, and so we're surviving, but at tremendous cost. And the South African economy is taking tremendous blows. The heavy taxation, the heavy affirmative action, the vast amount of crime, you can imagine even the best economy starts to waver under that. So this is where we are right now. The people are quite resilient. They're trying to make things work. But it's very hard when you are dealing with racial quotas and a crime sponsored by the government.
And I understand that the mining industry there is really having quite a bit of a problem because of the value of the rand, why they really can't compete with the gold mining there as they have in the past.
Well, indeed, the mines that have closed, there's been a lot of laying off on these mines, and the mines were really South Africa's backbone. And there's a question we've often asked: how is it that the country that's produced most of the gold in the world doesn't have a gold standard itself? Why did South Africa go off the gold standard? Because we were so rich and strong and powerful, and the South African rand was much stronger than the US dollar when we were on the gold standard. Why have we gone off the gold standard, and why is it that our earnings and our pensions and our savings have been just whittled away and impoverished by this high inflation that's been enforced upon us?
Well, I remember when I was there, I think the rand was about $1.25 to the dollar. So I think $1.25 U.S. to get a dollar, one rand. And what's the rand today?
At the moment, it's 6 rand to the dollar.
Well, I'm sure glad I didn't invest in rands. In fact, I'm very, very glad I came back to the United States. But it was a wonderful place to live, and the wonderful people. And I never felt any racial animosity when I was there, black to white. But there were always people trying to drum it up, but, you know, it was not a factor. But how about today? Is there growing racial tension in the community?
I would say that there's more racial tension, more racism in the country today than ever before in our history. This is the thing. The average South African on all sides, black, white, colored, have always had very good race relations and a tremendous amount of goodwill, and especially because of the churches. And from the time I was converted in 1977, I was at multiracial church camps and missions conferences, and we were going in and out of the townships, and the relationship between the races was always good. At the moment, it's still fairly good, but it's under a pressure because President Mbeki, the president of the ANC and the head of the country, is continually pushing the race card, and he's continually spewing out venom and a dissatisfaction against the whites and making the whites responsible for everything and pretending that racism is something that can only come from whites, whereas in fact we're seeing more and more that there's a tremendous amount of racism capable from black quarters, especially from the government. So unfortunately, affirmative action does produce racists, and at the moment we've got a lot of bitter, angry people on all sides blaming one another on a racial line for the ills of the country. And I wonder why it is that some people have seen it necessary to ruin good race relations and to ruin good economies with obvious systems that don't work. Affirmative action, racism, racial quotas, job reservation, and socialism do not work. Why is it that we must follow in the footsteps of failure?
Well, I think that they know exactly what they're doing. They're certainly not stupid people. Now, I understand that even some of the South African farmers have actually left, and haven't they been actually given farms in Mozambique?
Yes, in fact, we're very concerned about that. There were 70,000 commercial farms in South Africa, so 70,000 white commercial farmers, professional farmers, who were feeding 100 million people in Africa, by the way. So the South African farms are very efficient. Today we are down to about 32,000 commercial farmers. So we have less than half the commercial farmers today that we had at the handover 11 years ago. Some white farmers have gone to Mozambique and some other parts of Africa, it's true, Zambia even. But it's deeply distressing. We are losing farmers and we can't afford to have that. Now, I wonder, Dr. Stan, if you had a chance to see the film Hotel Rwanda.
No, I haven't. We're waiting for it to come out in DVD. I don't like to go out through the motion pictures, but I have seen the previews of it, and as soon as it's on DVD, we're going to have it.
I must recommend it. It's not the whole story, but it needs to be seen because there's so few films on Africa, on the kind of things we have to deal with. And Hotel Rwanda depicts what actually happened there. Now, there's some things that are missing. The film doesn't tell you that the people being slaughtered were Christians. The film doesn't tell you exactly how the role of the UN in enabling it, that the UN had helped disarm the people before the massacres began. It's not too sympathetic to the UN. It shows the UN as inept and ineffective, but in fact we would say it was worse than that. But nevertheless, it's a well-made film, and it's a film that's been shot in Africa, and it's without being gruesome. It's not a film that you have to turn your eyes away from a lot because it's been very sensitively produced. It's not gory, in other words. It's something that you could even show to your 13-year-old. It's not one of these blood-splattered films, even though it's dealing with a genocide. It's focusing on what one person did to save 1,200 lives in the middle of the genocide, but you get the picture of what happened in a more effective way. And I think people need to see it, but then they need to remember, perhaps they need to read our book, Holocaust in Rwanda, and see exactly what the whole story was, because the United Nations helped disarm the people and then stood by and did nothing, and that's depicted here. The UN stood by and did nothing while over 500,000 people were murdered by thugs organized by the government there in Rwanda. And it does show effectively how they were using the media to raise up racial animosity and hatred, and how the government of Rwanda, the Hutu mass murdering government, orchestrated this systematic slaughter. And I think for that reason, this film does need to be seen. It's an extraordinary expose of what's happened. Well, I'm sorry that for some reason they chose to keep quiet about the fact that the people being killed were Christians. And
what do you expect that coming out of Hollywood? There was an intense hatred of Christianity there, and their major producers in Hollywood.
Yes, indeed, but... This is a surprising film, despite the fact they don't give the whole story. I think they give enough that it should encourage people to do some more research and to say, okay, but why did this happen? Because the film depicts very well what happened, but that's why I wrote the Holocaust in Rwanda book, because they didn't say why it happened, and they didn't explain who aided and abetted it. Now, the film does bring out the fact that the French government were aiding and abetting and organizing and funding the genocide people. It does make clear the UN wasn't interested in saving Africans, but one thing that I think was unfair is the film made it out that the UN didn't want to help the people who were dying there because they were black. That's not true. The Christians in Africa are saying to us, no, it's not that the UN's against us being black, it's against us being Christian.
And I think that's so true. And of course, the man who gave the order nothing was to be done was a man named Kofi Annan.
Yes, Kofi Annan, of course, is not welcome in Rwanda, nor is the United Nations in any sense, because the Rwandese have had enough of the treachery and lying of the UN. It's not just that the UN was inept, as this film depicts. They were more than inept. They helped disarm the victims before the genocide. And for that, the Rwandese will never forgive them.
And, of course, there was a Canadian general there who had the forces and could have stopped it and requested permission to do what needed to be done, and Kofi Annan ordered him not to. And the general did not have the courage to do what should have been done and save the lives of the people. Apparently, he became an alcoholic. And, his whole life was ruined because he realized that when it came down, when a really important issue was there, he didn't have the courage to do what was right. Well, Peter, let's get the name of your your books out. You've got a new book, which we'll want to talk about in one of the other programs. But let's go ahead and get the address, the telephone number, how people can get your excellent material and support Frontline Ministries as we do.
Thank you. Yes, we've got resources on us. If people want to know what was going on over there in Rwanda, we've got a website, www.frontline.org.za. So it's frontline.org.za. 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 You can also phone a toll-free number in Arizona. My father-in-law's mission, In Touch Mission, has got our stocks. They can take orders for books, tapes, CDs, videos, even to send packages of free newsletters and reports. That's 1-888-918-4100. 1-888-918-4100. And you just ask for the frontline packet or any of the information, specify whether you want to know on Rwanda, South Africa, Sudan, Zimbabwe. We've got newsletters, prayer posters, and books and tapes. And now more and more we've got CDs as well, audio CDs with more of the details of what's going on and exposés of the United Nations, of the roles of gun control, World Council of Churches, and all the nonsense that they've been doing in Africa. Hello?
Yes, you've had, I've read your book on Rwanda, which is excellent. You had another book out, too, before you wrote your most recent one on Islam.
We've written The Faith and the Fire in Sudan, In the Killing Fields of Mozambique, and Holocaust in Rwanda. That's a trilogy on the persecuted church, looking at both communist persecution, animist persecution, and Islamic persecution. And the most recent book we've brought out is Slavery, Terrorism, and Islam, The Historical Roots and the Contemporary Threat.
And I think I would recommend all of Peter's work, too, because he's on the front lines. He's there, and he travels a great deal. He has a good team, and, you know, traveling throughout Africa. And, of course, this is really a spiritual battle that's taking place in Africa. The Christians are under attack from the animists. They're under attack from the Muslims. They're under attack from the Marxists. But apparently Christians are holding their own for the time being, aren't they?
Yes, they are. I mean, this is the extraordinary thing. We've got a very resilient, dynamic church in Africa, and it's growing very strong.
And sometimes I think that Christianity really prospers under persecution. Maybe that's one reason why the church is as weak as it is here in the United States. Affluence can be a wonderful thing, but it can also be a terrible curse. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Peter to wrap up this program right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Peter Hammond. Roger's been holding on the line very very patiently. Roger, you have a question for our guest.
Yeah, well, I think it's now interesting now that, of course, the South Africa has been delivered into the loving embrace of the ANC communists with the attendant and inevitable financial collapse. Now we hear, what, maybe once or twice a year some feature story, whereas before we had 3-4 times a week endlessly for several years about all the horrors of South Africa.
Well, of course, that's very... They manipulate our minds and our reality by focusing our attention on certain specific things. Did you have a question for Peter?
Yeah, now, has this, in other words, basically stemmed the influx of blacks from other parts of Africa?
In other words, before, why blacks were flowing into Africa. I know when I was there, they were trying to get in because there were jobs, an opportunity for the black man to improve his lot by getting into Africa, South Africa, where this terrible apartheid existed. What's happening today are, well, I suppose you've had a large influx of blacks, though, from Rhodesia, haven't you?
Yes, we do. In fact, they're coming in from everywhere, from the Congo, from Angola, from Mozambique. We have black people in South Africa, from Nigeria, from Ghana. South Africa still has a tremendous flow of illegal immigrants pouring into the country, and the government doesn't seem to be able to do much to stop that, because there still is, because of white enterprise in the country, a lot more job opportunities here in our country than there may be back in their own. Do you know, one thing that may shock your listeners, do you know that most of the black people in South Africa were not born in South Africa? Most black people in South Africa are immigrants, whereas most of the whites in South Africa are born in South Africa. So that's just an interesting thing to challenge many people's perceptions. A person looks at me, a white, and says, oh, he must be a foreigner, he's an immigrant. No, I'm an African. I was born in Africa. Africa's always been my home. They look at a black person living next door to me and think, oh, well, he's a true South African, he's been all his life. Not so, he's the illegal immigrant.
Well, let's go to Charles calling it after us. Charles, you have a quick question. We're almost out of time.
Yes, I've done some reading about Rwanda, and it seems that there's a bit of an inquisition going on there, and I wonder if you could elaborate on the role of the Catholic Church in that situation.
All right, fine. Thank you. Do you have any comments on that at all?
Yes, this is one of the big scandals I needed to expose in our book, Holocaust in Rwanda, is the role of the Catholic Church. The Archbishop of the Catholic Church was, in fact, one of the genocide architects and part of the Politburo of the Marxist government there, who organized the genocide. Many priests and nuns even took part in the genocide and were killing their congregants. In other words, I'm talking about Hutu members of the Catholic Church were members of the Marxist party that was running the country.
We're going to have to cover that when we get to next time.
Neighbors.
Thank you so very much, Peter. Well, I guess it's been Peter Hammond, and we've opened another can of worms. We'll have to get to that. Peter's going to be on with us a couple of more times. He'll be our guest, on the 23rd on the afternoon program. Thank you so very much for being with us, Peter.
Thank you so much, Dr. Stan. Always a Blessing to be with you. God bless all your listeners.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Well, certainly Peter Hammond is one of our favorite guests, and certainly when we heard that Peter was coming, in fact, they contacted us because we try to get him onto all of our programs to try to keep you abreast of what's really going on in Africa today. And American foreign policy has wrought terrible, terrible havoc there. But as I've said so often, men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And until you understand that we intentionally destroyed Rhodesia, we intentionally destroyed South Africa, we stood by, you know, and the Clinton administration, and we have the articles out of the New York Times, gave orders to everybody in the Clinton administration, do not use the word genocide, referring to the slaughter of the Christians in Rwanda, because then we'd be obligated to go in and do something about it. And then after 800,000 Christians had been hacked to death with machetes, Bill Clinton goes over with crocodile tears and says, oh, I'm so sorry. We want to apologize to you. We want to apologize to you. Well, I think that he will have to, of course, to one day stand before God and answer for his crimes. And I think Bill Clinton, along with, of course, Kofi Annan, who is black, today is the Secretary General of the United Nations, but at that time he was the man who gave the orders to the Canadian general, who didn't have the courage to do what was right, kept his men locked up as they were slaughtering them, the blacks, and then later when he got back to Canada became an alcoholic because he couldn't live with himself because he knew what he'd done. And the same thing I would challenge everybody tonight, to understand the horror that's taking place throughout the world in Africa and certainly in many countries of the world, in the Middle East today. Terrible things taking place in Uzbekistan. They killed several hundred demonstrators there within this last week. This is the government that we are supporting in Uzbekistan. Men and women do become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. Well, we hope that you'll continue listening to Radio Liberty, understand what's going on, and understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle for the hearts of men. If you have not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. You need to understand what's really going on. You need to understand that this is Satan's world. As Christians, we're living in the world, but we're not of the world. But we have an obligation to speak out against what's going on and do whatever we can to let people understand that there really is organized evil in this world, and some of it is working at the highest levels of our government today. And when you understand that, everything makes sense. And if you have not heard my tape on geopolitics, we point out that there are basically two forces in America. There have been, going back to the 1600s, shortly after the Pilgrims arrived, a group of occultists came to this country. If you want to read their writings, we carry Manly P. Hall's book, The Secret Destiny of America. Manly Hall was a Luciferian. We don't list a book, but you can order it through us. We actually carry it because we want you to read what he has to say about how these people came to America, and their goal was to use this country to establish the New Atlantis, to bring about the New World Order, and of course the New World Religion. That's why they put their emblem on the back of the Great Seal of the United States back in 1782, the pyramid cap by the All-Seeing Eye. The emblem not simply of Masonry, but of all the mystery religions, which antedated Masonry going back thousands and thousands of years to ancient Babylon and ancient Egypt. And you must understand the spiritual nature of what's going on today. They've hidden their symbols everywhere. Well, please remember our number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. My book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, Manly Hall's book, The Secret Destiny of America, or The Secret Teachings of All Ages. Pray for America, pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty. We'll be back in a few minutes with our next program here at Radio Liberty. Yeah, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, but please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line now from up Alaska way, Dr. Nick Begich, and Nick, of course, is a fascinating individual. He's done extensive work on HAARP. He comes from a political family, and he's been involved in politics up in there. He's trying to educate people about the high altitude of rural research project, this idea of being able to beam a billion of watts of electricity up into the ionosphere, and all the implications of what's being done as far as weather technology and military technology. And the HAARP is a fascinating book. In fact, we have a 4-tape set on that, and I'm sure we still carry Dr. Begich's book on HAARP. Tonight we're going to be talking about mind control, because Nick is going to be down on the weekend of the 28th and 29th of this month at the Conspiracy Conference, which is going to be held over by Great America in Santa Clara, just north of San Jose. And it's going to be a two-day conference. Nick is one of the featured speakers, and there will be a lot of other very interesting people there. Now, some of the people I would have to say I would disagree with, they're fascinating people. They are searching for what's going on. Many people realize that there is a conspiracy in the world. They just can't put it all together. Of course, we understand what the conspiracy is, and we go to the conferences in an effort to perhaps try to reach some of these people who I think are going way off in the wrong direction, searching for but following all the wrong paths, because there are all sorts of rabbit paths out there. Well, anyway, we hope many of you might be interested in knowing more about the Conspiracy Conference, where Nick Begich will be speaking. The telephone number is to call 209-832-0999. That's 209-832-0999. If you'd like information about the Conspiracy Conference, the two-day conference, and I'm going to have a booth there. I'm not going to be speaking. But anyway, Dr. Begich, thank you so very much for being with us.
Hey, it's always good to be with you.
Well, why don't you sort of introduce yourself and how you got onto this subject of mind control and really the frightening things that are available now by which our very reality can be altered and changed by those people working behind the scenes.
Sure. You know, this area of technology has been, you know, been advanced for, you know, actually decades. And, you know, if you really follow the early research, it goes back to the 1950s. You know, the thing that got me interested in the subject matter was basically the effect of electromagnetic fields on the human body, and my interest in electrophysiology as an area of science, the area of manipulating the state of the human mind is certainly an area that's advancing pretty rapidly, and I think probably one of the most important areas for public discussion today.
Well, you know, one of the things was that, you know, right after the Second World War, under Operation Paperclip, they brought a lot of the Nazi scientists over here,
right,
who were actually working on all these methods of mind control.
Right.
They were working on biological warfare, and they gave us many of the new diseases we have. They were working on the space program, but they were always also working on mind control. They were brought in here. Many of them were Nazi war criminals, and they were allowed to stay here and continue their work. And I fear that today, of course, we are witnessing the end result of some of the macabre ideas that began in the death camps over in Germany among the helpless prisoners there who were experimented on. Well, Nick, why don't you just pick up the story?
Sure. You know, the thing that that really got this country, I think, more interested in than anything was right after the Second World War, and then right after Korea, we had a lot of servicemen coming back from being prisoners of war that were exhibiting some pretty bizarre behaviors. If you kind of trace it from then, you know, through the 50s into the early 60s, during the Vietnam conflict, a device was captured, the LIDA machine, L-I-D-A, which was a Soviet machine used for in training brainwaves of prisoners of war during Vietnam. And what this device did is, with an external signal, was able to cause the brain to more or less mirror that signal, and as such become much more susceptible to interrogation and this kind of thing. Well, you know, from the 60s moving on into the, you know, into the latter part of the 60s and 70s, the science continued to advance. Then in the early 70s, we had the MK Ultra disclosures, which I'm sure you've discussed in your program programming before. This is where the CIA actually used a number of mind control techniques, mainly on servicemen, men and women, people in the armed services that were used as experimental subjects. There was actually a report in June of 1975 released, and it was the report to the President by the Commission on CIA activities in the United States. And this publication actually lays out some of the areas where MKUltra, some of the parts of that were actually disclosed. The pieces that were never disclosed really dealt with this idea of oscillating electromagnetic fields, rather than just chemicals like hallucinogenics and the things the CIA was most noted for back in MKUltra days.
And because they were pushing LSD, and right. Apparently Timothy Leary had some connections with the CIA, and they were actually trying to popularize this among our people. Why
right.
would anybody do anything that macabre? Well, for the same reason, they would introduce drugs and hard drugs into this country. Do you know a better way to destroy a nation than to actually encourage the use of hard drugs in the name of fighting a war on drugs? We're fighting a war on drugs. We're doing a good job. Terrible, terrible job. If we're trying to corrupt our society, I think we're doing a great job.
You know, in this, you know, the CIA's involvement in, you know, in this particular area, you know, never really went away. It just sort of shifted. And that's the way many of these programs go. You know, the interest shifts from one agency to another and then switches back and forth. But huge amounts of money were continued to be poured into this area. The Air Force in the 80s, began to look at the radio frequency dosages that would affect human health. And this came mainly from work that had been developed over decades by a guy named Jose Delgado.
Hold that thought.
Yes.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course Dr. Begich is talking about some of the work that was done by a man named Jose Delgado, these ideas of how you can control the mind by various frequencies. And, of course, the people in our government have always wanted to know how to control people, how you control the masses, and is there any way you can use radio frequency or oscillating waves to control the minds of the masses? And you say, why would anybody want to do that? To control them, because that's what government's all about, is controlling people. Pick up the story there, Nick.
Yep, and what Delgado was doing early on was looking at, in fact, he published a book called Towards a Psycho-Civilized Society, and in this he had been discussing his experiments with implantable technologies. Now, this is back in the late 60s, early 70s, but by the mid-80s, he had figured out that using just oscillating radio frequency signals, pulsing radio frequency signals, at 1/50th of the energy level that the Earth naturally produces. Now, to kind of put that in perspective, that is a very, very small amount of energy. The amount of radio frequency energy that man produces that surrounds us every day is 200 million times more than what nature produces. So when you talk about 1/50th, of what nature produces, you're talking about a very small amount. But the trigger was discovered was that there were window frequencies. There were specific signals that could be generated that would trigger huge changes in brain chemistry. And this is where this whole concept became pretty intriguing for military planners. And that was by the mid-80s.
All right, so they've developed all these techniques for controlling the minds of people using electromagnetic frequencies, but they're not going to let the people know that they have this ability.
No, you know, it breaks out in little bitty bits is what's happened over the years. And when you look at it over, you know, 30 or 40 years, and you start to put together the references from the, you know, the patents and the research materials that have been put together by academic institutions, much of which we have done, you really start to get a much better picture. I mean, a good example is a publication, New World Vistas, which was Air and Space Advisory Board to the Air Force, and these guys were looking at this whole concept of mind control. One of the things that they predicted, which actually has already happened, they predicted that they could actually transfer a sound signal directly into the brain of an individual. And this is what they said in their publication back in 1996. It said, it would also appear possible to create high-fidelity speech in the human body, raising the possibility of covert suggestion and psychological direction. Thus, it may be possible to talk to selected adversaries in a fashion that would be most disturbing to them. And what they're talking about there is actually sending a signal in that only that individual receives, and it comes across as that proverbial voice in the head. And then if you look, April 22nd, 2005, in Portland, Oregon, a guy, Elwood Norris, won the Lemonson MIT Prize for his invention, which is a device that actually does exactly what the Air Force predicted in 1996, and that's happened in this year, 2005. And this, you know, the idea of this guy Norris, he not only won this prize, he also picked up $500,000 as a result of it, just for discovering this new technology. But it's been around for a while, and the military's been looking at it for a long time.
And so basically this is all about control, isn't it? How do you control people?
Yeah, ultimately that is what it's about. I mean, that's, you know, I mean, even Delgado, you know, here's a scientist researching this, thinking that, hey, this is great, you know, we can make everybody happy, you know, wouldn't that be wonderful? And, you know, and it isn't. I mean, the fact is human beings are meant to experience a broad range of emotions, and interfering with that process, I think, is fundamentally flawed when you consider what the implications of this technology really is. Even in the May 25th, 2002 cover story in The Economist was called, the article lead story is The Future of Mind Control, and this is the whole ethical question addressed by The Economist as to what should really happen or whether or not this technology should really advance at all.
Well, I think that the important thing is for our listeners to understand that we have, of course, spent a phenomenal amount of money on our military. We
right.
spend more money on the American military than the next 20 countries in the world put together.
Right.
I
right.
mean, Russia and China and Britain and France and Germany, and we spend 20 times more on our military than the next 20 nations put together. Now, what are we doing with that? Are we really trying to come up with means of countering the radical communists, or, well, because actually communism is dead, that's what they insist. Are we trying to protect ourselves against the Chinese communists? Oh, no, they're our allies. Well, maybe it's Osama bin Laden living over there in a cave. That's why we're spending all these countless billions of dollars every year. Building up this military technology so that we can spy on people from outer space with satellites. We have all these satellites up there. We can read newspapers from outer space. We can see the dimples on a golf ball from outer space. We can change people's attitudes with all sorts of drugs, which they've done behavioral modification, or certainly now with electromagnetic. No, it's all about controlling the American people. It has never been about, defeating communism, because communism would have collapsed back in 1918 had it not been funded from the very beginning by American banks,
right.
By American corporations, and by the American government. And if you doubt that, you need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. And we refer you to the books that were written at that time, pointing out how we financed communism from its very inception, and did everything we could, of course, to discourage the anti-communists and to bring the communists into power. Why? Because they were the best enemy our money could buy. And if you don't have an enemy, how are you going to rally the people behind the government? It's the oldest trick tyrants have used it down throughout all time. So pick up the story, Dr. Begay.
Yeah, you know, this idea of manipulating the public, there's an Air Force journalist, not one that's read by very, very many folks. It's called Air Force Research Labs Technology Horizons. And in an issue that was published last year, this is the June 2004 issue, and it talks about this concept called controlled effects, which deal everything from, you know, targeting hardware, targeting software, things that run equipment, but the most important piece that it covers is controlled personnel effects. And these are everything from the idea of manipulating human health, and let me just read this one line.
Is that Air Force Research Technology Horizons?
Yes, and it's this. What I'm reading from is an article written by Dr. William Baker, who's their chief scientist. And this is what he said in a one-line quote. He said, by studying and modeling the human brain and nervous system, the ability to mentally influence or confuse personnel is also possible. Through sensory deception, it may be possible to create synthetic images or holograms to confuse an individual's visual sense, or in a similar manner, confuse his sense of sound, taste, touch, or smell, unquote. And, you know, this is exactly what the military considers the ultimate technologies, is those that target individuals which run software and run equipment, and the idea of overriding the human brain is the key for much of this technology that's being developed under the classification of non-lethal. And non-lethal technology in the United States, in an agreement between the Department of Justice and the Department of Defense, actually gets priority funding if they have dual use, uses in military applications as well as against our own citizens for riot control purposes and the like. And so you see these things developing on this parallel track, not just for our declared enemies, but also for our own citizens.
And I think it's so important for people to understand that this is all about those people who want to control the American population. You know, and it doesn't matter whether the Democrats are in power. It doesn't matter whether the Republicans are in power. The same people are doing exactly the same things, because it's all about control.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, when you think about you know, the basic American freedoms and liberties, what are they based on? You know, ultimately, they're based on freedom of thought. I mean, you can't have freedom of speech or assembly or religion or anything else if you can't think freely. And I think that's where the lack of debate around these technologies is really a mistake, because these are technologies that can be turned to incredibly horrible purposes or used to enhance human performance in certain ways. But some of this technology just flat should not be allowed. I mean, when you look at the U.S. Army War College and their publication Perimeters, they had an article about 5-6 years ago now, and it was called The Mind Has No Firewalls. And this article was the reprint of a Russian military journal called Orienteer, with some edits from our perspective. But basically, it was the idea of overriding brain function for military purposes, and how that technology was to evolve. And it said that this technology could be delivered through television broadcasts, radio broadcasts, the internet, even electrical grids, where you can carry, use those normal carriers of either power or information, and carry a signal on them that the subconscious and the body and the mind will pick up that will alter brain chemistry substantially. And this was demonstrated through Persinger's work with electromagnetism in Laurentian University in Canada, and Smirnov's work at the USSR Academy of Sciences, now the Russian Academy of Sciences, and a number of others around the world.
And, Chris, I suspect that we work very closely with the Russians on a lot of this scientific work, don't we?
Oh, absolutely, especially these days. I mean, at least openly these days. I mean, there was always cooperation when you looked at international scientific conferences where information is exchanged and papers are presented. But today, there's probably even more coming out of the former Soviet Union in terms of real discussion about the theoretical models under which this technology has evolved. And the problems there is the proliferation of the technology now, and the fact that, as you said, you know, we're funding our next enemy, China, you know, and we're building this incredible base when we are so dependent on technologies, and the very technologies that we've developed can be turned and misused by those with good technological know-how. And these things are things that have been predicted from the think tankers going back into the 60s and 70s. And I know you and I have talked about Brzezinski's work when he wrote Between Two Ages, which predicted much of the technology that we're talking about today, and as well as the whole socioeconomic collapse of Eastern Europe and the rest of the world.
Well, now, of course, Nick is referring to Zbigniew Brzezinski, the National Security Advisor under Jimmy Carter, who wrote a book called Between Two Ages, America in the Technotronic Era. And, of course, there he talked about how wonderful Marxism was, really how we had to control the population. In fact, he did such a good job that David Rockefeller, after reading the book, hired Brzezinski to form the Trilateral Commission made up of the people who rule the world. Well, this is Dr. Stan Back here at Radio Liberty, our guest this evening, Nick Pegas. We were just talking about Zygmunt Brzezinski. If you've read The Aquarian Conspiracy, a fascinating book written by a New Ager, a woman who is deeply involved in the New Age, and their symbol on the front of their book, The Aquarian Conspiracy, is called, it's basically three intertwining sixes. And she speaks glowingly of Zygmunt Brzezinski and what a wonderful man and how his ideas parallel theirs. And then, of course, if you look at the logo of the Trilateral Commission, what is it? It's three intertwining sixes. Six, six, six. These people understand the spiritual implications of what's going on. They just figure the American people are too stupid to do that. The book Aquarian Conspiracy, written by Marilyn Ferguson, we recommend to you. It is the Bible of the people who come from the dark side. And it's interesting that Zygmunt Brzezinski, the man who was hired by David Rockefeller to form the Trilateral Commission, is praised so extensively by Marilyn Ferguson, the mother of the New Age, the founder of the New Age movement, which permeates every aspect of our society today. Well, pick up the story there, Nick, as far as the development of these mind control techniques that they are refining, and they're not refining them to control the Russians, they're not refining them to control the people of in Tonga or in China, they're refining them to control the people here in America.
You know, and this is something that is not, really unusual circumstances that have brought it about. I mean, it's been around for a long time. The evolution of it, even mentioning the Soviets, you know, back during the so-called Cold War in the late 60s, early 70s, they were bombarding the U.S. Embassy with microwaves. And the public reports were, well, it was about surveillance. Well, what we find out, you know, decades later in the open literature is that pulsed microwaves manipulated in very specific ways can change brain chemistry so dramatically that it can take a person from being highly energetic and alert to being totally lethargic and passive and moving back and forth on and off like a light switch by just manipulating energy that has this profound effect on brain chemistry. Now what is interesting is that you see this stuff go back now over 50, 60 years, and the evolution of the research is now to the point where we're starting to get reports, like in the first Gulf War, there were reports coming out of the Scottish media that we quoted in Earth Rising. And this Scottish media report said that we embedded signals on the music broadcast into the air area that was playing the Muslim music and prayers that all of our adversaries were listening to. And it had a signal that created the emotion of fear and panic. And think about that first situation in the Gulf where you saw that fourth largest army in the world just collapse like a bunch of kids in their first fire drill. It was unbelievable.
And I think, of course, you can use these mind control techniques on military adversaries, or, of course, you can use them on civilian populations.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this is... there's flip sides to this. You know, there's some things being done. Unfortunately, most of the research is being closed and, under national security. But there are occasions where the private sector develops techniques that are quite amazing, utilizing principles that have been understood for quite some time. One in particular, brain biofeedback, which is a method used for enhancing ability to focus your attention in very specific ways for learning and for studying.
Hold that thought right there, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening is Dr. Nick Begich, and Nick is going to be speaking at the Conspiracy Conference. It's going to be held over in the Santa Clara area on the 28th and 29th of May. That's the end of this month. And if you're interested in knowing more about the Conspiracy Conference, the telephone number is 209-832-0999. That's 209-832-0999. But right now, before we go on, let's go to Tim, calling from Indianapolis. He's been hanging on very, very patiently. Hi, Tim. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, hi, everyone. I appreciate your show here tonight. Dr. Begich, I just had a couple quick questions concerning the weather. Here in Indiana, when I watch the Weather Channel here, the jet stream is bringing this huge amount of cold air down from Canada. And can you concur that with HAARP And also, real quick, I'm hearing on CNN about hurricanes. Hurricanes warning already. We have hurricane experts that can predict these hurricanes. I believe it's a bunch of bunk. Would you please comment on HARP and juxtaposition that with this weather, cold weather here in May, late May, and the hurricanes? Thank you.
Well, right, thanks. That's sort of a loaded question, but why don't you give us your best shot at it? Because
sure,
I think we know that HARP can be used for weather modification,
yep.
And they're doing all sorts of bizarre things just to see what's going to happen, or maybe they know what's going to happen.
Yep.
Pick up your thoughts on that, Nick.
Yeah, you know, actually there is a lot going on. I mean, HARP is being, the size of it is being enlarged greatly. After this summer, they'll have almost four times the antennas in the array as they had in the last few years, fully operational. The thing that that has happened, and this caller is correct, the jet streams have been changing a good bit. I mean, here in Alaska, we notice them coming from much deeper south in the Pacific, coming up here delivering pretty warm air. I mean, we're having record-breaking summer again this year, second time in a row for my area. And yet that very warm, moist air, once it hits interior Alaska this time of year and gets further north, you get into, below freezing temperatures where that jet stream is super cooled and then sent further south, back down, and much deeper south than they used to flow. So you're getting that colder weather, unseasonably cold weather. But when you look at HARP in particular, could HARP be responsible? The answer is yes, but is it responsible without monitoring? No one really knows.
Because it's all top secret. They can't let the Osama bin Laden know what we're doing. After all, he's over there in the cave. We've got to keep everything a secret from Osama bin Laden, so we can't let the American people know what's going on.
Right. It's funny because, the thing that we're doing in this work, the experiments that are taking place here, could be much more damaging than a guy in a cave, halfway around the world. But the point is, governments have been looking at HARP. I know the European Parliament has passed resolutions calling for a full treaty dialogue. Even our old adversaries, the Russians, have done the same. And the reason being is there's enough knowledge now internationally about what these technologies can do to cause a great deal of concern. And not because anybody's innocent, it's because they've been active participants in the development of the technologies and have gotten to the point where the recognition of the risks associated with them is greater than the enthusiasm of military planners for it.
And basically what you're saying is they can change the jet stream, they can change the weather. We don't know what they're doing, but we do know that they're quadrupling the power and the array up there in Alaska. But aren't there similar arrays all around the world?
Yep. Yeah, the former Soviet Union had five of these. They were the original ionosphere keters that were attributed to back in the 70s and 60s, the woodpecker signal that ham operators had picked up and figured were coming from those transmitters. There's the IZICAT system in Europe. There's a number of antennas in Canada and other parts of North America. And the point is, this technology is widespread and well understood. And the thing that's happening now is that the power thresholds are reaching points where there's levels that have never been experimented before, and there is some question about whether or not these systems will cause greater harm than good. And
can we actually create hurricanes with this? Can we create great storms and tornadoes?
Well, there was actually a study done, a follow-on study by Dr. Bernard Eastland that was done for the European Space Agency on exactly that question, and it was oriented towards tornadoes, particularly where you have warm air and cold air meeting, and you get that shearing effect that causes that tornado formation. And what he suggested is that if you heated up the cooler air using these instruments, you could in fact stop a tornado from forming, or conversely, heat up the already heated area, create a greater differential, therein creating even a greater shearing effect and stronger tornadoes. So,
well, of course,
yeah, you could do that.
Of course, we know it was so unusual this last year. Four major hurricanes pounding the Florida coast. Was it simply an act of God, or was it an act of God, a man who would like to play God? That's a question.
It's hard to say. They have Arecibo, Puerto Rico is one of the primary places where large arrays like the one situated here in Alaska have been built.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here at Radio Liberty. Well, Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Dr. Nick Biggetts, and really we asked him to hear, not to talk about HAARP, because we have a number of other conversations with him, but Tim had called in from Indianapolis, so we got a little off the subject. But let's get back to this whole idea of mind control. And not only you can control mind with drugs, you can put drugs in the drinking water, you can put drugs into the food that we're eating that will affect the mind. But of course, Nick's major concern is, what can you do with electromagnetics to influence the human mind, not only that of the so-called enemy, but that of our own people? So why don't you pick up the story from there, Nick? And what did you learn? Because, and we really, of course, will want you, as soon as we get our other stations back on board, we want to have you have the opportunity to tell our listeners about the great DVDs you put out, but we'll wait about 2 minutes to do that.
Sure. You know, the thing that's important, for people to realize is that the technology is a two-edged sword. You know, it's like just like the automobile. You know, you can either have your local mail delivered or your bomber delivered, you know. But the point is, this technology and the places that it's being used in civilian sectors and being developed is having some pretty interesting possibilities emerge. One in particular in the Minneapolis School District, where they use technique of brain biofeedback, where they teach young children that are on Ritalin and these psychoactive drugs to either slow them down or speed them up, because either they're running too much theta in the slower range of the brain activity, or they're running too much beta, too much higher range, and they can't get in this learning state that they want to be in. So what they've done historically and in massive ways is drugging. Well, Minneapolis looked at this technique where you actually train a child to learn how to moderate their own brain activity by seeing their brain activity in real time on a computer screen and by learning how to control the image on the screen. And what happens is, after about 30 sessions, you don't need any more machinery. You can do it on your own, and you don't need any Ritalin anymore. You don't need any of those psychoactive drugs that destroy kids, and you essentially take them out of special ed programs and they're in regular ed programs, where they can learn in many, many cases, better than their peers, because they've learned how to do what many of us, you know, wish we could do as easily as these young children. They've used the same thing for stroke recovery victims and others who have lost brain function, and yet you don't hear a whole lot about this technology, and it's been around now for almost 20 years. On the other hand, you have military planners and researchers discovering even greater possibilities with the human brain, but developing techniques for destroying the thinking process rather than enhancing it, which I think is a crying shame. I mean, the technology that is available today that could enhance individual learning and performance.
Hold that thought for just a moment here. Well, Dr. Stan, our guest is Nick Biggetts, and of course he's pointing out that this technology is a two-edged sword. Some of this technology, this electromagnetic technology, can actually increase the ability to learn, the ability for the brain to function, or it can actually be destructive for the brain as well. Is that the case, Nick?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the idea that there's been a number of technologies developed for enhancing human performance by being able to use what's being learned to actually train individuals so that you can manipulate your brain activity in a way that is conducive to, say, accelerated learning or relaxation or those kinds of things, but where it's in control of the individual, where you're basically learning how to do what you can do naturally, but in a more efficient way. The same as like any other tool, whether you use a computer or a telephone or travel on an airplane. But the problem with the technologies of the mind is, who controls them? You know, I mean, this is again the question of what goes in. You know, who's going to decide that? You know, and in the United States, with compulsory education and where these technologies are going, that becomes a very big question, because kids are required to be in public schools or in a school setting. Curriculum is controlled, and these new techniques for enhancing, for instance, there's ways to increase learning at an accelerated rate that the military is looking for, but what's been discovered in many instances is that it bypasses the conscious mind in a way that doesn't allow for the normal filtering of good and evil and right and wrong. So consequently, information is sort of dumped in and just accepted, as one Russian researcher said, if it were the voice of God, you can't be disobeyed. And you know, when you think about that, this is where it becomes extremely important, because these technologies, think about learning a language like Spanish that's kind of value neutral. I mean, you're not learning what to believe, you're just learning basic language skills. If you could do that in a few hours, and in the future, I believe that's what's coming, that's what military planners and futurists are now predicting is not too off, far off in the distant future, you might be able to actually take that information in at that pace and retain it, which would be great if you were controlling the curriculum. But as I said, in compulsory education 20, 30 years from now, as these systems develop and migrate into civilian sectors, who's going to decide what goes into our kids' heads?
Well, of course, one thing, if the current people are in charge, why there will be amoral or immoral ideas. I mean, we're starting to indoctrinate our children today in kindergarten as to the normality of homosexuality and destroy any moral restrictions as far as sexual activity is concerned. So, you know, if they'll do this today, you know, through the regular education, think of the advantage of the total corruption that could come if the wicked people are able to control the minds of our children using the electronic technology.
Yeah, and even think about this in terms of political advertising or just advertising generally. I mean, the idea that as these technologies evolve without restriction, without constraint, they can be used to manipulate political outcomes, to manipulate consumer decisions. And I think that's, we're going to see more of it. I think there's already some of that happening within the marketplace, just with people knowing what things make people particularly impacted by suggestion, whether it's to buy soap or an elected politician. And this has gotten even more and more sophisticated as we recognize that when the mind is in a certain state of awareness, it's more susceptible to those kinds of suggestions. And this is exactly what we see in some of the really high-powered media campaigns, just the way the background sounds, the way the light flickers, all of the components of the ads create an environment where people are much more conducive to suggestion.
Well, our telephone number here is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. We've got Rich calling in from Capitola. Hi, Rich. How you doing?
Hi, Rich. This is Rich. One of my names. I wanted to ask if this was related at all to magnetic therapy, where people kind of surround themselves with magnets.
All right, that's a very good question. There's certainly people who try to get into these. They will use magnets in one way or another, or try to create a magnetic field around themselves. How does this fit into that idea there, Rich?
Yeah, you know, there's magnetic fields do have an effect on psychology. Persinger at Laurentian University in Canada has done a great deal of work using magnetic fields placed in the proximity of the head of an individual can create a number of illusions and experiences that are quite dramatic and have been reported on CBC TV in Canada and other places. The other issue of magnets being used for healing purposes, there's been, you know, some research on this area, not as much as you would like to see, but certainly a fair amount showing some positive effects of magnets in terms of healing. But you see a lot of things out there in the marketplace that aren't very well put together and documented. But in this case, there is some research that supports magnets being used in this way. You know, when you look at the human body as an energy system, you know, most people think about it in terms of the nervous system and the circulatory system and the tissues. But there's an energy system also that can be actually charted and mapped. In fact, at the lecture coming up down there in the Bay Area, we'll be demonstrating in the course of this a tool that actually measures these various places where this energy is present on the body, and they happen to correlate to the acupuncture points on the body, and those points now are have been shown to be, you can treat them with needles or electric current or even cold lasers in a class 4 cold laser and affect tremendous changes in the body. And these are the very same understandings that are leading to some of the advances in the non-lethal weapons area as well.
And of course, also a lot of those are acupressure points, so you can stimulate them in a number of ways. They're there, I believe, of course, they're there for a reason. I believe God put them there for a reason. But of course, they can be used for good or for for evil.
Right, and you know, this is, you know, we can actually, we take a device that measures skin resistance, and you actually roll it across those points, and whenever you hit an acupuncture point, a little light comes on and flickers, and a little tone signals, and because there actually is a measurable difference on the surface of the skin based on the electrical properties of the skin as they relate to the acupuncture system.
So you basically would say that the magnetic therapy is a benevolent thing, and your main thrust of the program tonight has been magnetic field being used for malevolent purposes.
I think this is, again, you know, electromagnetic fields, and let me give you a good analogy. You know, dialing through the radio stations tonight to pick up this station, you went through a lot of static, and you finally got a nice clear signal where you had harmony between a transmitter and a receiver. The same is true in the human body. If you think about each of the cells, each of the atoms, each of the molecules, each of the body compounds and components, each has a unique energy relationship that will stimulate it in different ways. And so you can create chemical reactions by adding chemicals in, which everybody understands, but you can also create chemical changes by adding energy in, changing the energy state of those things that are present. But you have to have the right frequencies, just in the same way you need resonance between the transmitter and receiver with a television or a radio. You need the same in terms of the human body. And this is the thing that is leading, I think, in many cases, to some great breakthroughs in science and the health fields, but at the same time, to some huge potentials for misuse. And the mind control area, I think, is the most important area that deserves public discussion because of where we sit with the technology today.
And I think that's absolutely right. Anything else, Rich?
No, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Let's go to Ray, who's calling from Santa Cruz. And again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Ray, how are you tonight?
Oh, fair. I'm doing pretty good.
Okay.
I just wanted to ask your guest, Mr. Vegas, Ted Kaczynski... You know what I'm talking about, I think.
Ted Kaczynski was a victim of a
CIA mind control program or something?
People assert that from time to time, and I just don't.
I don't know.
We actually have a book. We carried it. I don't know if we still have it in stock, but yes, he actually got into a CIA mind control.
It got out of hand.
A whole book written on that. Mm-hmm. He was a victim of. They destroyed all of his beliefs. They destroyed everything he believed in. Mm-hmm. And then they wonder why, of course, he did what he did.
Of course, it probably got out of hand, and they had to arrest him, of course.
He was blowing up people.
He was blowing up people.
Yeah. I mean,
of course, they created it.
Even if you're the product of the CIA mind control, you can't go around blowing up especially important people.
Right, yeah.
So, you know, the thing about this technology, I mean, and all of the government experimentation, Secretary of Energy O'Leary during the Clinton administration admitted mm-hmm. 500,000 American victims of non-consensual human experimentation in the boundaries of the United States over a 40-year period. And some of those were victims of mind control technologies, and yet there's been gone to jail for that. Nobody.
There's been a mysterious amount of scientists that have been involved in these programs that have died mysteriously. I'm just wondering,
we'll have to get Steve Quayle on one of those days. Most of those scientists, however, were the microbiologists, but we'll get Steve on one of those evenings. It's a little off the subject, but anything else, Ray?
Yeah, that was all.
God bless. Bye-bye. Let's go to Jack calling from Michigan. Hi, Jack.
Hi there.
Speak up now.
Yes, Nick. I was wondering if, by any chance, the chemtrails factor in as perhaps a plasma matrix that... enables the brain wave entrainment.
All right, fine.
I don't see it actually. I don't think you don't need anything. You just need a transmitter that'll oscillate a signal in the right frequency range, and you can use any number of means to accomplish that. I mean, things as simple as the flickering light of a television set can entrain the brain in pretty profound ways, as was shown in Japan a number of years ago when 700 kids went to the hospital epileptic seizures having watched a cartoon. You know, that idea of flickering light, or whether it's a sound signal in a bioral beat, or whether it's a pulse signal coming across a television screen, there's many ways to accomplish this, and I think that's the important thing for people to realize, is that the technology is not so complex that it can't be picked up by virtually any government, and then the systems that deliver the things that we all rely on today are the very systems that become the vehicle for transmission. And I think this is where people have brought up, and the Morrises in particular, who were involved in some of this research back during the Reagan administration, suggested that there be a chip put on all electronic devices that screen these signals out. And that technology could be easily put together by those who understand what's happening in the field. And yet, none of that happens either. So, you know, when you think about it, you know, what does the big news say? And I think he was accurate. You know, he said, you know, no matter who was in control, the temptation to use these kinds of technologies would come, whether they were liberal or conservatives. And I think the people that are in control, you look at this as just sort of the ultimate tool for maintaining that level of power.
And, of course, 30 years later, 35 years later, Zbigniew Brzezinski is one of the most powerful men in the United States. So,
absolutely.
But if you have a chance to get hold of his book, let's see, Between Two Ages, America and the Technotronic Era, it's well worthwhile, well worthwhile reading it, because it's like deja vu all over again.
Exactly. Yeah, it
what's
is.
Going on. Hey, Dr. thanks so much for calling, Jack.
Dr. Stan?
Yes.
One last thing.
Okay, go ahead.
On a very positive note, Nick might recall this name of Dr. Margaret Patterson in connection with something called the brain tuner, now called the bile tuner.
Uh-huh.
I'll simply state that if you can, or anyone in the audience, can go to the local library and get the January 1983 Omni magazine and look in a section called Outer Limits, and there is an incredibly descriptive and definitive treatise on a technology that restores neurochemical balance and production when it has been totally disrupted because of whatever exogenous factors.
All right, fine. Thanks very much, Jack. Have you ever heard about that, Nick?
Yeah, there was some really good material put out back in the 80s. There was a book, Megabrain and Megabrain Power by Hutchinson. They're no longer in print, but they can be obtained by used bookstores or good libraries. That kind of go through some of the things that were being done and that are available that really help and enhance. And then there was a series of newsletters. It never got very wide publicity, but the newsletters were more or less reprints of scientific studies in the area. And reviewing those, these technologies, you know, now 20, 25 years old, we're just starting to see them make it into mainstream institutions, but they're still 10, 15 years away. And you think about that, a 40-year gap between something that can really enhance people's learning and performance in a positive way versus leaving it suppressed for sinister applications.
Well, we've got Roger calling us from Allentown, Pennsylvania. Roger, did you have a question, a comment for our guest?
Yes, my question relates to Tim McVeigh, and I expect the answer would be speculative, but that would be good enough, because I was never quite satisfied even pre-high-tech, old-fashioned Manchurian candidate style mind control. And I had a problem with the notion that he was a Christian identity aligned with Muslims type of thing. And then there was that odd...
Well, what you're asking is, do you think that Timothy McVeigh had any mind control element?
Yeah, but even beyond that, there's never been adequate explanation for that odd one-day delay where somehow the federal officials had to meet with Tim before his ostensible execution. I'm just wondering if he hadn't had any video, etc., anything incriminating in reserve, if he was really deaded.
Right. Well, thanks very much, Roger. I don't know. Do you want to get into that at all? Do you have any thoughts on it?
It's just one of those things that you just don't have a lot of evidence. I mean, people make assertions all the time. And this is the trouble with a lot of the technologies. You know, we only find out 40 or 50 years later when everyone's dead what people did. And unfortunately, the national security rules in this country protect the academics and the experimenters without any consideration to those victimized. And in this area of technology, there are victims. And they have been identified, you know, in the past in very, very rare acknowledgments. But in the area of electromagnetic fields and experimentation there's been very little, if any, acknowledgement of who are the experimentees. You know, and when you go and look at what our government does when things don't kind of fit the Constitution within our boundaries. We shuffle people off to other countries to do our dirty work, and unfortunately I think that happens way more often today than we would care to imagine. Someday the cover gets opened, and I think that's where the conference coming up in the Bay Area, you know, it's really about that. It's opening people's awareness to the possibilities that exist out there and providing the evidence of it. And I think that's the important thing. At some point along the way, you get to that critical mass where people say, hey, enough is enough, and it's time for a change. And maybe we see that change.
Let's get your telephone number out. How people can get in touch with you.
Sure. Our number is 888-690-1277.
One more time.
888-690-1277. We've got a great DVD on mind control that we've just released.
All right, and how can they get that? What about your website?
Okay, if you go to the website at earthpulse.com, or you call our toll-free number, the DVD is $20 and we pay the freight.
Okay, we'll be back in just a moment. It is a great DVD. We've seen it. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, as far as the Tim McVeigh situation was concerned, the one thing I can say is that, and I've heard this from several people who are very close to Tim, who knew him well, that there was a psychiatrist who was to see Tim a number of times. It was a psychiatrist who worked for the CIA. His name was Jolly West. Why would the CIA send their psychiatrist to see Tim McVeigh on a number of occasions? That, of course, is there was a wonderful book. It was called OK Bomb. It was written by a man named Jim Keith, who wrote several other books on mind control, which we do carry. We don't carry OK Bomb. It's out of print. But we do carry Mass Control and Mind Control. And, of course, Jim Keith, who wrote those books, went into the hospital for a minor surgical procedure, of which I'd done certainly 1,000 without any serious complications. But of course, when Jim Keith went in, he died, and it could have been just a coincidence. And maybe it was just a coincidence a month or two later when his publisher of Illuminist Press died in an auto accident, and then another couple of weeks later, and his previous wife dies in an accident. Maybe that's all coincidence, or maybe they just knew too much. Be that as it may, Nick, how would you like to wrap up this evening's program?
Well, I think the important thing on all of these technologies is people need to be informed, get the information, and then really try and move some of the policy a little bit differently. I mean, it doesn't mean that, I think it's not over until it's over. I think there's a lot that can be done. My mission the next 4 or 5 years is really going to be to try and bring this issue out. We've done a lot of research. The DVD is the first thing we've produced in information on the subject that we think is an in-depth review, but we'll be producing well-referenced material. We'll be uploading a new website that'll deal with all of this material in the coming months. And the main mission, I think, for all of us is to not lose hope and not lose heart, but to continue to fight the good fight and do the things that we need to do to really change the way we and others might see the world.
And I think that there's a very conscious effort to get us so discouraged, so frightened, so neutralized that we want to run off some other place and try to hide, to think we can escape what's coming down. Let me tell you that there's going to be no place in the world that's going to be safe. When the New World Order comes about, they will have electronic ability to track every single individual.
Yep.
Nobody will buy or sell, unless, of course, they wear the mark of the beast, unless they have their chip in place. They know exactly what's coming down. They don't want the American people to know, and our job is to try to get that information out. And, of course, remember once again that Nick Begich is going to be speaking over there in Santa Clara on the 28th and 29th. Call 209-832-0999. Well, Nick, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Would you just once again get your website and your telephone number out for people?
Sure. The website is earthpulse.com, and the toll-free is 888-690-1277, and we do have the Mind Control DVD out. It's $20 freight paid.
All right. God bless. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Take care.
And I'm looking well. I won't probably see you until we get to the conference.
But yep, we'll see you then.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, fine. Well, that was Dr. Nick Begich, and a lot of fascinating information there. But let me point out that this is really a spiritual battle behind all of these various conspiracies that we talk about, and whether it be the people who are trying to reestablish lost Atlantis, whether it would be the Masons, whether it be other people who are using these electromagnetic methods, whether it be the people who want to implant everyone with a chip. There is a common denominator, and that is the spiritual component of the fact we're moving rapidly, hell-bent towards this establishment of a one-world dictatorship under a new one-world ruler. And you know, what is our greatest tool? Well, first of all, prayer. I honestly believe that this is a spiritual battle, and I think we have to pray for God's protection for ourselves and, of course, to help us reach people across America. If the people of this country would repent, as the people of ancient Nineveh did when Jonah went there, why I believe God would put off his judgment on this country. If we do not repent, if there's not a real change in America, a great spiritual awakening as we had in 1730 and again in about 1830 or 1840, if there's not a third great awakening in America, then the country we have known and loved will cease to exist. And so pray for America. Really do pray for America and understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men. And the other side controls the media. The other side controls the wealth of this country. The other side controls the government. The other side controls the educational system. But hopefully we're on God's side. And that's, I would far better rather be there than, you know, because that will ultimately be the winning side. So understand that there really are spiritual forces out there. If you have not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. You need to read it and study it. We carry a number of books on the things we were talking about tonight. These mind control experiments, one of them is Operation Bluebird, written by a psychiatrist who has gone into the 18,000 pages of CIA information that's been released and has dealt with many of the people whose minds have been destroyed by the CIA experiments. Operation Bluebird by Dr. Colin Ross, an important, very important book. And you can hear my interviews with Colin Ross in the 4-tape set on Operation Paperclip, because that deals with how we brought the Nazi scientists here to America. We brought the Nazi scientists here to America to begin doing these macabre experiments. So that's Operation Paperclip, and then, of course, the book we actually have, and it's called Operation Bluebird. We have the CD. Actually, you can get it with 17,000 pages of CD, pardon me, of CIA files on it. We have the MK Ultra report. We have the behavioral modification reports. These are long suppressed Senate reports going into the background of what's going on. We have the Rockefeller Committee report, came out of the Veterans Administration in 1994, going into the macabre, terrible experiments that were carried out on the American people, just as they're carrying out terrible experiments on you and your children today. The water fluoridation is a great experiment. They don't fluoridate water in Europe because they understand it's a poison. If you haven't gotten our new syllabus, the Hidden Agenda on Water Fluoridation, it's called Hidden Agenda, the Fluoride Deception. We have a great new video that goes with that. You have to understand they're poisoning your children. They know exactly what they're doing. You need to get the documentation. It's all there on my video, the Fluoride Deception, and, of course, it's a hidden agenda, the talk, hidden agenda, the syllabus. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. Remember, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until, I guess it'll be tomorrow evening, we'll be back once again. May the Lord be with you.